Fasten your seatbelt and turn up the radio. We're going on a road trip. Our guest today on Route 51 is someone who is well-known and admired across north-central Wisconsin, Susie Favor Hamilton, a former Olympic track star and star athlete in her hometown of Stevens Point, and now a person who has dedicated herself to a very serious cause, the fight against suicide. I'm Glenn Mobrick. Today we're going to talk to Susie about that cause and about the challenges she's faced in her own life, the competitive athletic regimen that defined her life all during her school years, her breathtaking success, winning 9 NCAA titles at UW-Madison, becoming one of only two women to run 1,500 meters in less than 4 minutes, winning 7 U.S. national championships, becoming an in-demand corporate spokesperson for Nike and other companies, her grueling training schedule for the Olympics in 1992, 1996, and 2000, the shock as she reached the pinnacle of her career, only to fall during the final stretch of the 1,500-meter run in the 2000 Games in Sydney, Australia. And there was also the emotional trauma caused by the very public suicide of her brother Dan in 1999 in downtown Wausau, her subsequent battle with depression, and coming out on the other side by focusing on her family, her husband Mark, and her daughter Kylie. Susie Favor Hamilton joins us live from our Wisconsin Public Radio studio in Madison. She has a lot to share with us over the next hour, and we have a lot that we can learn from her. And if you'd like to talk to Susie and join us on the air, our lines are open toll-free at 1-800-780-9742. That's 1-800-780-9742. Susie Favor Hamilton, can you hear me? And hopefully I can hear you.
I can hear you great, and thanks for the wonderful introduction.
Well, thank you for making yourself available for the next hour. You've become the official spokesperson for Prevent Suicide Wisconsin. Tell us why this is something you wanted to do.
You know, they approached me about this, and obviously, you know, it's something you have to think about. Do I want to associate myself with this? And, you know, without a doubt, when they asked me, I said, absolutely. I lost my brother 9-9 of 99 to a suicide. He jumped off of the Landmark building in Wausau, Wisconsin, and that day changed my life forever. And I want to so badly get the stigma erased from suicide and help to educate people that this is a disease that people have. This is a mental illness, and we should really educate ourselves and do whatever we can to help society.
Prevent Suicide Wisconsin has 3 events coming up in the next 2 weeks. The kickoff event for the fall campaign, which is Wednesday, September 8th in Green Bay at the Brett Favre Steakhouse. Then there's a second event Monday, September 13th at the State Capitol Rotunda in Madison. And then a suicide prevention summit Tuesday, September 14th and Wednesday, September 15th in La Crosse. Anything special we should know about these events?
You know, again, it's having this become a topic that people talk about, like I'm talking about it to you right now, it's a topic that people just don't want to touch. They don't want to go there. Again, it has that stigma, and it's something we need to talk about. We need to go there. We need to go to these places that are uncomfortable so we can help each other. And what I found in my life, I've come across so many people that have said, Susie, I suffer from depression. I've had the same issues as you. Thank you for speaking out because it makes me feel more real, like it's okay. And for some reason, I had this persona that I had to be perfect in my own mind. And that was something that really caused me a lot of pain.
You know, we do have a stigma in our society about suicide. We don't talk about it. I'm a newsman, and as such, I don't cover suicides, at least not particular suicides, although I'm painfully aware of the fact that they occur and occur pretty frequently. In fact, I was working on the assignment desk at the ABC television affiliate here in Wausau, Channel 9, when your brother killed himself in 1999. And I remember hearing it come across the police scanner, and I also remember dismissing it at the time as just another guy who jumped from the Landmark building, because he wasn't the first.
Right, right. And isn't that sad that we look at it just another person who had jumped from the building and kind of dismiss it at that? And when this is somebody who has a disease like cancer, it's a true disease. It's just a disease that it's in the mind, so you can't see it. It doesn't have a broken leg attached to it. So that makes it a little harder to diagnose. But when my brother committed suicide that day, I remember just the pain, obviously, going through of finding out. But I also remember my mom telling me that she had talked to the doctor, a doctor friend of hers, and a doctor friend had said, there's nothing you could have done. You could have had all the money in the world and just told Dan he won the lottery. He won $5 million. You could have told him, don't jump. And he was in such a dark place that the only answer for him was to jump. He had no other options, and that's how deep this depression is that people can get into.
Tell us what happened with Dan on that day. Where was he beforehand? How was he feeling? What happened?
My brother was bipolar, and it was hard for him to hold down jobs for a long time. And he had just gotten a new job at the coffee shop downtown Wausau. He walked in, got a cup of coffee, he sat down, and the people at the coffee shop said looked fine. He was, you know, he was really polite and nice to them, just like he always is. He probably told a little bit of a joke. And he drank his coffee and he walked out. And the next thing he did was he walked over to the Landmark building, and it was really early in the morning, convinced the janitor to let him in. And once he got in, he told the janitor, there was the most incredible sunrise. You've got to come to the roof with me to see it. And my brother, being very persuasive and just a wonderful guy, the janitor said, sure, let's go. And when he got to the roof, that is when, obviously, he decided that it was time to end his life. And that was the only option he knew. And again, that's where I say the depression is so dark. Dan did not jump to make my life terrible or make my parents' life terrible. He did this because his brain was not functioning right, and it was the only answer.
And the thing that I think a lot of people would be surprised about is the fact that he talked to people beforehand.
Yes.
He talked to the guy at the Landmark building, and nobody had any clue that he was about to do it.
Right, exactly. Isn't that amazing? And that's why when you talk about depression or you hear that somebody committed suicide, you're like, what? That person had everything all together. I had no idea. Depression is an illness that you can disguise. You can pretend that everything is fine, but inside you're really suffering. And I speak because I suffer from depression.
Mm-hmm.
I take medication, and I also had great, amazing therapy here in Madison, Wisconsin. Dr. Heilizer just changed my world in such an amazing way.
And anybody who's met you, Susie, who sees how outgoing and positive you are, even back in those days, you know, the hugs you have for everybody, the warmth, would never suspect that you were suffering from depression.
Oh, absolutely not. And maybe I'm just a good actress. But it's easy to go on the outside world and paint this picture of your life being perfect, and then behind doors having the suffering that really nobody knows except for your family. You know, my husband obviously knew that something wasn't right with me. And just like mm-hmm. my brother, I know his wife, they knew things weren't going right. And my husband, he kept saying, Susie, we need to get you some help. And I kept saying, no, I'll be fine tomorrow. Tomorrow's a new day. I'm going to be fine. And I kept blaming everybody else. It was everybody's problem except for my own. I never took responsibility for myself. And the day I finally said, I'm going to stop getting irritated at so-and-so, I'm going to finally get some help. And that was the day that it all started to change. Mm.
You know, we know how it affected you as somebody who was so close to Dan. And I'm going to ask you a question that you might not even know the answer to. We got a call from Joan in northern Wisconsin who left a message asking, what happened to the janitor? How did that affect him that day?
Oh, my gosh. You know, again, with the suicide, with my brother's jump, I never found out about the janitor. The janitor in no way has any responsibility in this action by my brother.
But you can imagine how it affected him to see all of that happen.
What he must feel like inside, and I would want him to know that, you know, anybody would have done the same thing in his position. He couldn't have done anything different. I would have done the same thing if I was the janitor and somebody persuasive came up and said, let's go look at the sunrise. I'd been, oh, this, what a great opportunity.
Right.
Let's go do it. Yeah.
Susie Faber-Hamilton, you were a star athlete competing in the Olympics in 1992 and 96. You were a star athlete at UW-Madison before that. And in Stevens Point, growing up, and all that time, Dan was fighting his personal struggle. Was your intense competitive urge, your grueling training schedule, was that in any way an effort on your part to escape from what was going on with your brother at the time?
Absolutely, especially when I was in high school, elementary school. I discovered running fifth grade. I beat all the boys in my school, and that was when I discovered it. And I found that with the chaos in the family, it was easy for me to just go out for a run, and then I felt so much better. I could kind of put everything behind me. I could kind of cover it up. So I discovered running became my drug. I didn't know it at the time, but I just knew running made me feel great. I did it every day. My parents would beg me, take a day off, Susie. It wasn't part of my chemical makeup. I needed it every day to feel good.
Well, we hear that depression sometimes runs in families, not always, but sometimes. Did you feel similar urges growing up, or did your battle with depression really come later?
My battle really came later. There were definite signs as a youngster, and I can look back now and see those signs, and I think this is really good for parents to be aware of. I was a perfectionist. I was also a pleaser. I had the personality that I wanted to do really well in life, and I wanted to please everybody. I had an eating disorder. Eating disorders, that was another way, had nothing really to do with food. It had control and a way to make myself feel better. These were all really good signs of depression ahead of me to come or already in me.
Mm-hmm.
But again, I was medicating myself with my running.
With your running.
And yes. When you have to understand, when you're training at such a high level, and I mean, my life was training. I was getting this intense high from my running that is just amazing.
You were a tremendous star. 9 NCAA titles at UW-Madison, becoming one of only two women to run 1,500 meters in less than 4 minutes, winning 7 U.S. national championships. Were you Superwoman? Did you feel invincible?
I think I tried to be Superwoman. You know, college running for me was quite easy. And that was the gift I got from my parents. My parents gave me some really good genes. And then I just was lucky to have that work ethic to really bring it out. Nobody ever pushed me. And I truly believe my depression was a source of what pushed me to run so far. And I even believe in talking to people that have achieved athletics at a high level, that there is something not quite right in the brain that gives us this drive to push ourselves so incredibly hard and sacrifice so much for ourselves. And to be a professional athlete, it's such a selfish world. It was all about me. The world was all about me. So regards to my brother and growing up, my running was my life, and I look back on it, and I wish I would have been able to spend more time with my brother and understand his disease as a child, but I didn't. And as a child, I just said, why doesn't Dan just shake himself and get better? Why doesn't he just snap out of it? And now I realize you can't just snap out of it.
Susie Faber-Hamilton, former Olympian, star athlete, native of Stevens Point, talking about the suicide of her brother, her own battle with depression, and her work for suicide prevention in the state of Wisconsin. I'm Glenn Mobrig. This is Route 51. If you've got a question for Susie, if you'd like to just comment on what she's been saying, give us a call. Our lines are open at 1-800-780-9742. That's 1-800-780-9742. When we come back, Susie, I'd like to talk to you about that race in the 2000 Olympics, the 1,500-meter race in which you fell.
Okay.
And
that sounds good.
We will be back right after these short messages.
Support for WPR comes from UMR, a United Healthcare company providing employee benefits administration, integrated health management, and pharmacy benefits administration for self-funded employers throughout the U.S. More about UMR at umr.com.
I'm Glenn Moberg. This is Route 51. We're talking to former Olympian Susie Favor-Hamilton about her work for suicide prevention and the battle that she has faced against depression. Susie, you fell just short in the 1992 and 96 Olympics, and here you were at the start of the 1500-meter race in the Olympics in Sydney in the year 2000. It's a race in which you were the overwhelming favorite to win the gold medal, a race in which you were ahead going into the final 200 meters, and a race in which you collapsed and fell just 100 meters from the finish line. Take us back to the start of that race, and that was less than a year after your brother killed himself. Tell us what was going through your mind at the time.
Oh, at the starting line, I just remember being scared to death. I was so scared because I knew that my tank of gas was empty, meaning that I wasn't feeling 100%. And here I am in the Olympic final, and the world is watching. In my eyes, I honestly thought everybody in the world was watching Susie run that day. I mean, that is how out of perspective my mind was, that nobody had a life. They were just watching me run. And what happened was, with 200 meters to go in the race, I was basically a Ferrari that was on empty. I had nothing left in me, and I still had 200 meters to go, which is still a long ways in the mile. And at that moment, I started to panic because I knew I wasn't going to win. And when I started to panic, it made my running 10 times harder. I remember tightening up, and it was like I was running in slow motion. I couldn't run. And I also remember seeing white spots in the crowd. No longer I could hear them. I kind of was going into my own little zone. And somehow I willed myself another 100 yards. And at that stretch, I could see the gold medal at the finish. If I could just run 75 yards more, I could be the gold medalist. And nobody in the U.S. history has ever won an Olympic medal in this event. So, oh my gosh, I'm going to be a superstar. It's going to be amazing life. I have to make this happen. But I knew there was no more gas in my tank. And so a girl passed me from, I think it was Algeria. And I remember going, oh, you know, I can't even repeat the words that my brain was thinking at that time. And
there goes the gold.
Right, right. And then another girl passes me. Now I'm thinking I could get the bronze and I could go back to Wisconsin, and they would still have that reception at the airport like they do if you're the Packers and you win the Super Bowl. Everybody comes to the airport. I'm thinking, oh, that could still happen. But then at that moment, another girl passed me, and now there was no longer any metal going around my chest. And at that split second, I did not plan it at all, but at that split second, I said, I cannot finish in fourth, fifth, sixth. I can't finish in any of these places. These aren't good enough. And at that split second, I told myself, just fall. It happened so quickly that I fell. My head hit the ground. And when I hit the ground, I remember being so angry at myself. I've never been that angry at myself ever in my life than at that moment. And I said, Susie, you just blew it. You trained your entire life for this moment, and now look where you are on the ground. Get up and finish the race. And somehow I willed myself to get up. I did not want to, but I felt if I didn't get up, I would totally be a loser because I didn't finish. Somebody had once said, you always have to finish your races. So,
are you saying that you didn't collapse because you had an injury or you tripped and fell? Are you saying that you deliberately, you intentionally fell in that last stretch?
Yeah, deliberately, intentionally. It was totally my decision. And after that race happened, the media said, oh, she's dehydrated, she must be injured. So the media had already created my excuse. So I just went with it. I'm like, why not? They've already come up with the reason, so I don't even have to say why, because I was never going to tell anybody anyways. I was never going to be telling your radio show, that's for sure.
Were you trying to get sympathy?
I definitely was. I was looking. I think sympathy felt like a better option than disappointment in my mind.
How do the people who admired you react when you tell them that Susie Favor-Hamilton, the star athlete that so many people looked up to, not only fell, but faked the fall in order to get attention and sympathy after it became apparent you wouldn't win the medal?
Oh, I've had so many different comments. I've had people who have said, I've done the exact same thing in races. I totally understand. I've had people the other way, like, you've got to be kidding. Why in the heck would she do such a thing? That's ridiculous. Nobody would do that. So I've had both, you know, both sides telling me that they believe it or they don't believe it. And I'm saying, I totally did this on purpose. And I realized back in my career, if you go back in my career, whenever there was a race, when somebody was right on me at the finish line, I always fall, or I fell. And I would fall leaning because of exhaustion, and also falling because I wanted to win so bad. It's almost like I wanted to win. It's such an incredible limit.
It was like an anxiety attack, right?
It totally was. It totally was. And the anxiety, also part of my depression. The anxiety attacks were incredible. And I had other attacks when I was younger and as adult that I look back on now.
Well, you later had a baby, a miracle baby, and then you went into a period of depression after that. We have to take a short break for news, and when we come back, I want to talk to you about your family, about your child, and about how all of that helped pull you back from the brink. Also, what you did to get treated for your depression. I'd like you to give some advice to people who might be suffering the symptoms that you're suffering, and also advice for young athletes, and particularly girls in grade school and high school, where the competitive pressure is just so great. Susie, can you come back after the break and we can touch on all those areas?
I would love to.
And we'll also take your phone calls, 1-800-780-9742. Deb Trader in Wausau, hang on. We're getting to you right after the news break. We are back on Route 51 Regional Talk Radio. I'm Glenn Moberg. Our guest today, Susie Famer Hamilton, former Olympic track star athlete from her hometown of Stevens Point, and a woman who has battled with depression, who had to experience the suicide of her brother, and who is now a spokesperson for Prevent Suicide Wisconsin, an organization that's starting its kickoff to its fall campaign in the next 2 weeks, with events next Wednesday in Green Bay, an event on Monday at the State Capitol Rotunda in Madison, and then on Tuesday and Wednesday in La Crosse. If you'd like to join the conversation, our phone number, 1-800-780-9742. That's 1-800-780-9742. And let's go to the phones right now. We have Deb Trader in Wausau, who is with us. And Deb, thanks for joining us on Route 51.
Hi, Glenn.
Deb, you have been a guest on this show before, and you have worked with suicide prevention. Why don't you just give kind of a thumbnail sketch of your professional background so that folks know where you're coming from?
Well, basically, what I've been doing for about the last 10 years is working in suicide prevention and mental health awareness. And I've been with Mental Health America Wisconsin for a little over 2 years now, and I've been helping initiate our new statewide initiative of Prevent Suicide Wisconsin, working with coalitions all over the state, helping new coalitions get started, and see if we can take the fear and the stigma out of mental illness and suicidal ideation, and hopefully we can talk about it more and people can get more help, and maybe we can prevent the tragedy of suicide more often than not.
And Susie Favor Hamilton is quite a spokesperson for your cause.
Susie, you've been great. She's been fun to work with, and everybody is so excited about the work she's done so far, and we're just looking forward to all the things that are going to be happening in the next couple of weeks.
Well, Susie, Deb is, of course, one of a number of people who've brought you to various places in Wisconsin. Deb Trader, if you could ask Susie a question or ask her to elaborate on something to get the points across that she's been making, what would that be?
That the greatest thing that I've gotten out of working with Susie is the fact that she's the genuine feeling that I want everyone to know that suicide can happen to, you know, can affects anyone, and it does. It affects the whole community. It affects everyone. And the fact that depression and other mental illnesses can affect anyone, no matter where you are in your life, whether you're a star athlete like Susie or an everyday person or a professional or anyone, it can affect anyone at any time in their life.
Susie, do you have anything to add to that?
No, I mean, I definitely agree. And I think for me, that's why I've had such a great response to telling my story is people just assume I'm already a certain way, that life must be roses and must be perfect. And nobody's life is perfect. And if it is, then I clearly don't need to be hanging out with those people because nobody is perfect. And I think for me, that's what's been so wonderful about sharing my story around the country now is that I can finally just be me. And if people like me, great. If they don't, it's totally okay. I wasn't put on this earth to please the world anymore like I once thought. I'm here to live the best life, and I want to live a fabulous life. And I made that choice in 2005 after I had my daughter that I deserve a fabulous life, and I'm going to change it. I'm going to do everything I can to have that happen.
Deb, do you have anything to add?
No, I think that's the perfect way that no matter what we go through, there are things we can do. Is it going to be easy? Probably not. But there are things to live for, and there are things that we can do to help each other live through the bad times and help each other along to get through those bad times and live that fabulous life. Everybody deserves to have that, no matter what your idea of fabulous is.
Right, exactly.
Deb Trader, thanks so much for joining us. And again, if any of you listening are dealing with problems of depression or you know someone who is either contemplated suicide or committed suicide, if you'd like to talk to Susie Favor Hamilton about the role model that she's been for young people, if you're in Stevens Point and you remember her great career in that community and what she still means to all of the folks in central Wisconsin, again, this is your show. Give us a call at 1-800-780-9742. Susie, let's pick up the story again. Right before the news break, we were talking about how you not only fell, but you faked the fall
right.
in the 1,500-meter race, the one that was just broadcast on television worldwide back in the 2000 Olympics. What did that incident, that whole situation, teach you about yourself?
Well, when that incident happened, I mean, my world was just crushed. I honestly couldn't see beyond that race. I thought that was what my life was all about, was that one race, and it didn't go well. So my life must not have gone well. I focused so much on that one event. I didn't have balance. I didn't have other areas to focus on if one thing went wrong. That's something I've learned, and I hope young people will learn. Don't put your eggs in one basket. Have balance. Have other things that you love to do, because that gift could be taken away, like my running could be taken away tomorrow, and I may not have it. So it's so important.
And it took you a while to come clean about that and tell people exactly what happened.
Okay, so what happened was my best friend was dying of cancer at the time. It was 2005, and I remember driving home and knowing that Mary was close to dying. She was in the hospital, and I remember thinking that night as I'm driving home in the car, wouldn't it be just so easy, Susie, just to drive the car off the road? And then all these thoughts in your head and this thought that keeps telling you, you know, do you need to be around here anymore? Can that thought just go away? Maybe these thoughts will go away. And that moment, instead of driving my car off the road, I knew I shouldn't do it. But I got home and I told my husband, the hardest thing to say was I told him what I was thinking at that moment. And he was shocked. And he said, Susie, if you don't call a doctor right now, I'm going to call a doctor and we're going to get you some help and it's going to be okay. It was the best thing my husband could have said to me. Instead of dismissing it and saying, oh, Susie, stop being so crazy and so melodramatic,
mm-hmm.
he recognized it and he said, don't worry. And that was the best thing anybody could have done is and said, it's okay.
What kind of help did you get? How did you end up pulling yourself back from the abyss?
Well, it's interesting because I called the doctor the next day, the next morning to get in. I wanted to get in that morning. And they said, well, we don't have any openings for another month. We're just booked. And I'm on the phone thinking, I need to come in right now. I don't have a broken arm or broken leg, but my brain is not right. And I told the person on the phone, you know what? Last night I thought about driving my car off the road. Can I come in? Is that okay? And kind of upset because I needed help and somebody wasn't recognizing it. And so they immediately, oh, we'll get you in. Can you be here in an hour? And I was there in an hour. The doctor walked in the room. I was bawling my head off before she even walked in. And she walks in and she said, Susie, you're going to be okay. You're totally going to be okay. And here I am. How does she know I'm going to be okay? She hasn't even talked to me yet. But she knows all about depression, and she knew that I was suffering from depression. We talked more. She put me on some medication instantly. I felt like the medication worked that second, which is ridiculous because it takes 3 weeks to work. But the fact that the caring people around me, everybody was trying to help, really gave me a good feeling inside. And I started taking the medication, and I started with therapy with my doctor in Madison, who I was saying is Dr. Heilizer. And that was what helped me. The 8 months that I spent with Rachel Heilizer totally changed my life. And it wasn't about Rachel telling me what I need to do. It was about Rachel listening to my life
and the message to people who are thinking of committing suicide is that help is available. And let people know, people will be there to help you immediately.
Absolutely. And in my brother's case, he was on medication, a very strong medication. He, on his own, decided to go off of his medication, which is something in his condition you can never do. He needed his medicine to survive. And because of going off the medication, he got to a point where nobody could really step in. He was so far gone at that time, and nobody was around to really recognize the signs. So again, the communication is so important in talking. If somebody looks different or acts different, 2 weeks before my brother's death, he was the most amazing person in the world. You would never have thought anything was wrong. He was on this euphoric high, exercising 10 miles a day on his bike. He had just lost about 60 pounds. He looked fabulous. Everything seemed perfect. And when things seem too perfect, that is a definite sign.
Talk about your family and how that's helped keep you grounded. Your husband, Mark, your daughter, Kylie.
You know, when I had Kylie 5 years ago, I woke up to this world that wasn't about me anymore.
Was this before you envisioned driving off the side of the road?
Yes, this was definitely before that. So the doctors related the birth and maybe postpartum, but I knew it was more than postpartum. And after I had Kylie, things weren't right. There was definitely something hormonal that wasn't right with me.
Now, you were at a Rotary meeting in Wausau a couple of weeks ago, which is where I first heard your story. And you described your state of mind walking out of the hospital, almost a euphoria that here you've become a mother, you had what you called your miracle baby, and maybe you could put the whole episode of Susie Favor Hamilton, the track star, behind you and start a new life, a new identity.
Right. And that's how I felt. I mean, when I walked out of the hospital, everything looked so vibrant. The sky was this incredible, intense blue. The flowers, even the air, it seemed like such a free, wonderful world. Like all this baggage I had been carrying was now gone. It was about Kylie, the new baby, and how wonderful this is. It was the most amazing feeling. I remember looking in my backyard that day, and it looked like this English garden with fountains. And believe me, my garden is not an English garden with fountains, but in my mind, it looked like it. It was just amazing.
So you're happier than you've ever been in your life. You have your miracle baby, and then somehow this downward spiral takes place into this intense depression. And that's something that a lot of people are probably scratching their heads who are listening right now thinking, how could that happen?
Well, what happened is, and it happened very quickly, after I had Kylie, while I was pregnant, I think the hormones were just so incredible. I was so happy to be pregnant and having a baby. Dream come true. After I had Kylie, I was supposed to get back into running and train for the next Olympics. And I would go to my treadmill in the basement because it was wintertime, and I'd tell my husband I'm going to go for a run. And I would crawl up in a little ball on the floor by my treadmill crying because for some reason I could not get on that treadmill to run. And I knew I had to run to make myself feel better, but I couldn't do it.
And also, if you were going to be in the Olympics ever again, you had to get back into shape, right?
Exactly. And the thoughts in my head were, I really don't want to run anymore. I want to live life. And that also added to my depression. What was I going to do next? I was always this famous runner. I had this identity. Who am I going to be now? You know, that was a whole new element to go through in life when you've never planned for this. Luckily, my husband had me take my real estate exam and had started me into the real estate world with him before the baby, because he was worrying, what is she going to do after her running? So he was focusing on what was going to be next for me before I was even focusing on it.
So the two of you now run a real estate company in Madison.
Right. The two of us sell real estate full time. Which is just, it's been a fabulous gift to be good at other things besides running, that balance that I always wanted in my life. The reason I couldn't run on that treadmill, that was one of the ways I found out how running became my drug. If I could have ran that day on the treadmill, I would have felt better, but I couldn't. I couldn't get on the treadmill. An Olympic athlete who needs to exercise to make herself better couldn't even do it. You realize how depression can come sneak in your life and take over, where you know what you need to do, but you can't do it. I was eating, my meals were a protein shake and a Pop-Tart for like two meals a day. I hardly ate anything. And I just wanted to sleep all the time.
Mm-hmm.
It was just the weirdest, darkest world. And I told my doctor, just get me out of this dark world. I can't go there anymore. I have to get out of here.
And they did get you out. And anyone who's listening, who's suffering from the same sorts of symptoms, who's suffering from this sense of despair, it's what Shakespeare called people leading lives of quiet desperation. If that fits you, there's help available. Make that phone call. Talk to somebody that you're close to.
Talk to a counselor. Talk to, you know, somebody you know who really cares, who's going to listen to you. Because people will listen, but they won't really listen. And they might just let it go out the other ear. And this is serious. This is serious stuff.
1-800-780-9742. If you'd like to talk to Susie Favor-Hamilton, we'll be back with her to wrap up the program right after these few short messages.
Support for Wisconsin Public Radio comes from the Riverfront Jazz Festival, September 4th and 5th at Pifner Park in Stevens Point. Performers include Marlon McKay, Butch Thompson, and Who's Your Daddy? Information at riverfrontjazzfest.com.
I'm Glenn Moberg. We are talking to Susie Favor-Hamilton, star Olympian, high school athlete, a star in her hometown of Stevens Point, where I'm sure a lot of folks are listening right now. And if you'd like to join the conversation, we've got a few minutes left, 1-800-780-9742. Susie, tell us about your husband, Mark, how you met him. You two guys have been together now for a long time.
I met him 24 years ago on a blind date freshman year at Wisconsin, and he played baseball, and obviously I was running, and they played baseball indoors in the shell where we would run around, and they had all these nets around, and he would just watch me run every day when he should have been pitching and watching the baseball, and just asked a mutual friend of ours from high school if he would set us up on a date, and it just kind of worked out like that. And on my first date, I knew that I wanted to marry him. I knew instantly that this was the person for me. He's an amazing guy, very supportive, and it can't always be easy living with somebody like myself. That's for sure. There's no doubt. I like attention. I obviously am in the limelight, and he is so comfortable with that he wants nothing to do with it. And he's just very confident in himself, and well, I love that about him.
I read an interview in Family Life magazine in which Mark described growing up on the West Coast, where he's from, and he was amazed at how level-headed and down-to-earth you were, despite your fame as a star athlete. Is there something about the Midwest, about Wisconsin, maybe about your hometown of Stevens Point, about our culture here in central Wisconsin that maybe other people in this country could learn from?
Oh, I think you're right on. I just think the people of Wisconsin are awesome. We have this quality about family. Family comes first, and we care about people. We care about others. It's the culture here. Again, family comes number one, and that's something I love about it. And nobody is better than the other guy. And I guess I grew up that way, knowing that everybody is equal and everybody has that opportunity to speak up. So do.
And growing up in Stevens Point, you wrote that you won a track competition in the fifth grade, and that race meant more to you than all the other events you would later compete in. Why was that?
Oh, because that moment was... That was the beginning of my running career, and that's when all my peers were chanting my name. And it was a moment that I realized this is what I want to do with my life. And obviously, everybody wants to be a professional athlete. I just never knew it could come true.
And you were recognized at that moment by your peers?
Do you think
young girls in our society have a particularly strong need to stand out and be recognized in what's really still a male-dominated culture?
Well, I don't think it's still a male-dominated culture. I think women like myself and a lot of my friends were doing great things and showing that women are just as strong. So,
well, we still haven't had a woman president of the United States. We've got only a handful of women in the U.S. Senate, hardly any in Congress. I think I'm pretty comfortable describing this as a male-dominated culture.
You're right. We do need those aspects of a woman president. I think that would be very exciting. But I think for young girls right now, we need role models. We need really good, healthy role models. And this is kind of off the topic, but I get parents who write to me or email me all the time and say, what can I do to make my daughter a faster runner? I mean, I get this once a week for sure. Mm-hmm. Can you give me the workouts, the coaching tips? And I can't help it but think, well, why is the parent doing this? Why could the problem be the parent? Maybe the parent wants the child to be this so bad that they're forgetting, you know, sports are fun. We should take the pressure off kids. And by doing something as emailing me or calling me for the advice and tips, to me, that would feel like pressure to a young kid.
Well, there's a lot of pressure put on young children. What advice would you give to young athletes, and particularly girls who are caught up in an intense training and competition regimen, so they don't shut out the other important parts of their lives?
Balance is key, but I think for girls it's so different than boys. Girls look at sports in a very social way. We do sports, we want to win, but we also love the social aspect of it. And I think that is fabulous. And keep that going in your sports, because it will make you enjoy it and love it even that much more. I think when we take the fun out and we take the peer groups out, it becomes too much of a job. And that's when you lose the fun for it. And let's face it, in high school, you're still maturing, you're still growing. I didn't run my fastest till I was 30 years old. And if you can maintain it up into your 20s and keep going, that's fantastic. But to be an Olympian in high school is a very rare thing to happen in the running world.
Susie Faver-Hamilton, a real quick question. Give me a quick answer. Do you still wish you had that gold medal on your mantelpiece?
You know what? If you came up and asked me that on the street, I would say, oh, that definitely would be great to have, but you know what? I'm not in the place where I would be if I didn't have it. I'm in a wonderful place now, and because I don't have that medal, I've gone this journey that's taken me to where I am today. So material-wise, of course I'd like it, but mentally, I'd rather be where I am today.
Susie, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Susie Favor Hamilton. You can find out more about Susie at susiefavorhamilton.com. A reminder, she will be the featured speaker at three upcoming Prevent Suicide Wisconsin events. The kickoff next Wednesday, September 8th in Green Bay at the Brett Favre Steakhouse. A second event Monday, September 13th at the State Capitol Rotunda in Madison. That's at noon on Monday. And a Suicide Prevention Summit Tuesday and Wednesday, September 14th and 15th in La Crosse. I'm Glenn Moberg of Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks to our executive producer, Rick Ryer, our on-air producer, Jane Ritger. Thanks to Tim Allen for technical production at our Wisconsin Public Radio studio in Madison. Thanks, as always, to John Altenberg for the Route 51 theme. Next Thursday, September 9th, the forum featuring the two Republicans running for the 7th Congressional District seat, Sean Duffy and Dan Mielke. Thanks again for riding along with us today. Until next week, we're heading out of town.